Well, good afternoon, friends and colleagues. My name's Greg Taylor. I have the good fortune to chair the current session, A Recipe for Success, a Reserving Transformation Case Study. Let me introduce to you our two presenters, Ankita Mundra, a dynamic and results-driven professional with 14 years of experience in the general insurance industry. Ankita Mundra serves as a senior manager responsible for the reserving platform and process optimisation at QBE Australia. Known for her forward-thinking leadership and enterprise problem-solving skills, she consistently delivers innovative solutions with a keen focus on the bottom line. And Laurie Tan. Laurie is a fellow of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia and a managing director of Dynamo Analytics. She has extensive international actuarial experience with a specialty in reserving and primarily supports businesses with their actuarial transformation. Laurie is passionate about training and enabling the actuary of the future. The floor is yours.
So firstly, thank you all for joining us today. It's my pleasure to be here with my fellow chef to talk about a recipe for success in reserve transformation. As you can see, I also like baking, so there's a bit of an undercurrent coming through these slides, but the focus of our session is not to talk about actuarial methodology. It's rather to talk about the factors that can contribute to success or failure of a transformation. Our case study is reserving. However, we think the themes that we'll present are equally applicable to any transformation within the actuarial or the financial sector. Whilst we're not going to talk about actuarial methodology, selecting the right tool is a key or a critical ingredient to success. But equally important is having a purpose, is having the right plan, being flexible, having clear objectives, and I'll be honest, having a bit of resilience. So we will talk through the steps over the next few slides. We'll start with asking why. We'll then talk about defining your target state. Are you baking a lemon or a chocolate cake? Do you need a mixer or do you need a whisk? We'll then go on to talk in detail about some of the experiences we've had working at QBE, but also across the globe in transformation through the implementation, the build, the testing, the UAT, and finally going live. So step one, ask why. I think it's pretty common in any action that you take to have purpose. So before you embark on a transformation, so say here, don't just jump on the bandwagon. Step back and ask, why do you need to transform? What is driving your organization towards a change? Pretty common with the industry are the four key objectives on the slide here. So one, potentially to improve operational efficiency, or it could be about better control and governance. Or maybe there's some new technology in the market that you want to leverage that can enhance and create more sophisticated modelling for you. That drive for more sophisticated modelling could be due to changes in regulatory requirements, or it could be because your claims, your portfolio has changed and you need advanced techniques. So first, step back, ask why, think about your motivations. Ankita.
Thanks, Laurie. I'll talk about what were the motivations for QBE to undertake this transformation journey. Most of the times, the motivations are actually the pain areas. So I'll talk about three main pain areas that governed us to take this transformation journey. First, inconsistent practices. Just to get a bit of a background, we have around 22 major reserving classes, including personal lines, commercial lines, statutory lines, credit lines, including LMI. From a reserving point of view, we reserve for around 175 classes. It's huge. To top that, as a consequence of system migrations and acquisitions over years, we have multiple underwriting systems. What that means that when we were doing our reserving, we were preparing the data for multiple systems. We had separate data preparations, separate spreadsheet models, which we were setting up, and then creating this whole reporting, which was not too easy to consolidate. And all these different, because of varied systems and reserving classes, we had a lot of inconsistencies going around in all the assumptions and all the spreadsheets we had, which obviously led to inefficiencies and complexities. Around, you know, given I said 175 reserving classes, that also brings me to my second point, manual and labor intensive process. Our current, at that point in time, when we had not done this transformation, we were using spreadsheet models. More than 50% of our time was actually spent on manually updating these spreadsheets, doing the data processing, and finally consolidating the results. These spreadsheet models, over time, gradually became really very complex, very heavy and interconnected because, you know, over time, I think we are all guilty of doing that. We have a model which we start with, and gradually team members will create a mini model or mini version, you know, some workings around in the same model, and you'll then roll forward the same spreadsheet model. And over years, you know, over a decade, that spreadsheet model really can become very complicated and complex and not easy to follow. You would have a lot of areas where you have done, you know, those manual interventions, which would have made it prone to errors. And obviously, inconsistencies, which will creep in because automatically managing so many spreadsheets will lead to inconsistencies. We were also did not have a process where we can easily aggregate these results or consolidate them or to even do more granular analysis for them. We were not set up for that. The kind of requirements which were changing, the, you know, the regulatory requirements, every now and then, you know, people will expect more ad hoc analysis. We were not really set up for that. So it really started challenging us, our existing system. Coming to my third point, resource constraints. As I said, most of our team was actually busy in the manual workings, which meant we had very little time for that we can focus on the strategic actuarial pieces. And plus, the team was really dependent on the specifics, know-hows of the spreadsheets, the nuances of the products, which meant that mobility for the team members was really restricted. It was not easy for us to move our team members, you know, even internally within the different products. It started becoming a real challenge for us. So we move to step two. Back to you, Laurie.
So you've asked why. You've got a business case. You've got some motivation. So what's next? Define that target state. Before you think about the software, before you think about the detailed actuarial methodologies, define what success looks like. Think about your priorities, think about your constraints, and then do a high-level design. What are your ways of working going to be? What roles and responsibilities will you establish? Think about that before you then go in and select what we call the right tool or tools. And when you're selecting those tools, think about your skill set of your team. Think about, you know, that business case in terms of cost benefit for acquiring some technology. Think about how you will actually embed and encourage that change into a new platform. And then finally, once you've got your tool, sit down and, as they said in the plenary session, get that balance right. Don't just do because you can. Think about that balance between accuracy and simplicity. Think about what level of flexibility versus complexity you want to bring into your modeling. There will be trade-offs. It is genuinely hard to balance competing priorities to meet the needs of your different stakeholders across the business. And that really is the key. Engage with your stakeholders. Think about their pain points. Bring them along the journey as you set that success criteria.
I'll now talk about QBE's objectives, why we started with this transformation journey. So I did talk about the pain areas earlier. Obviously, the pain areas gave us a clear opportunity, and the opportunity then drove us to take certain objectives. A key objective was on people. Most of the actuarial teams are set up to do high value work. You want them to, you know, do strategic pieces and not spend a lot of their time on doing things manually and low value work. So we wanted the same. We wanted our actuarial team to take more leading path, to be involved in the discussions, business planning and performance discussions, rather than, you know, just take a seat back. So people for us was definitely one of the biggest objective. The question was, then how can we, you know, enable them to do or focus on more strategic pieces? That was through operational efficiency. So we wanted to, you know, channelize or, you know, make our entire reserving process efficient so that we spend really a relatively very small amount of time on data preparations, setting up the models, and, you know, for our reporting. This would also help us to achieve and maintain consistency, you know, have results, numbers that really are reliable, that you can rely on. So accuracy plus reliability on that numbers. And then at the same time, faster turnaround of those reports. Can we make it quickly? Can we do things on working day one? Was definitely a question. And at the same time, do not compromise on the quality. So we are not saying that just simplify everything that, you know, you can just get the results on working day one. We still wanted it to be sophisticated, you know, to have all the details that we wanted, but at the same time, still achieve that as quickly as possible. This then takes us to our third objective, that we also wanted to think about a tool which is more forward-looking and futuristic, you know, which can help us in achieving the main two objectives, you know, of people and operational efficiency. So we're looking for more advanced technology and tools that can help us to streamline the entire reserving process end-to-end. So we're not just talking about the reserving process, but end-to-end everything, starting from data preparation to the final reporting. So we wanted to streamline the entire value chain. We wanted to enable our team so that they can rapidly, you know, they can do work on ad hoc request. They can rapidly do that rather than it takes time. And then the most important, you know, the entire reporting framework, you know, aggregation of the reports, and at the same time, having an ability to slice and dice the data at whatever grain, you know, possible. So these were our specific objectives. Now, the key question comes, when we started looking for a tool or a technology, you know, what specifically, what tool is, you know, we should be looking at? We had specific questions in our mind because, you know, you can decide your priorities. You can have 10 different priorities, but you might not get everything in one particular tool. So we had, you know, we had finalized few of our priorities that, you know, this is definitely one of the must for us in the tool. So we started looking around, and for us, Dynamo Cycle was the right tool. And I'll also explain some of the priorities that went behind in deciding that tool. So we were looking for a tool that can do Australian reserving methods. So here at Australia, we have definitely created a lot of reserving methods which are very unique to this country. So we wanted a tool where, you know, we can easily do those Australian methods like PPCI, PCE, PPCF, or any other custom method for that matter. We also wanted, as I said, we wanted to automate the entire value chain. So we did not want a solution just for reserving, but we were looking for a platform where we can also do the entire data processing. So say if I have my claims transaction data, can I just put it in and get my final report? That's what we wanted. So we wanted something that can have, you know, the entire data processing, all the reserving methods, so I can do my core reserving, focus on core reserving, and then from there, aggregation and, you know, detailed analysis, so everything on the downstream reports. So that was definitely one of our another priority that we were looking at. I already covered a bit on more that, you know, can it easily allocate, you know, you might have different systems, so can it really allocate and aggregate the data at that level? So on the reporting side, and plus, all the companies have their specific systems and processes. So we were looking at something that can easily integrate with our existing systems and have the capability that in future, if we want to move to cloud, it can move to cloud or Databricks environment easily. Collaborative, which obviously we all would have seen that, you know, there are multiple team members working on the same piece of project. So you definitely want an environment where it is, you know, a tool that can enable the collaborative working environment. Managing multiple bases, you know, gross, ITC, NRI, reinsurances, claim handling expenses. Can it easily manage all those different bases for the entire processing and reporting? And all the, you know, sensitivities, analysis of change, and automated AVR from reporting point of view, and dashboards. So, you know, you have done your reserving assumptions. Is the tool capable of showing you the impact of your change in assumptions simultaneously? Or you then bring it back to some other tool, platform, and then see how your assumptions are looking at, how your final output is looking at. But we wanted to see the impact then and there so that it can make our life a bit easier in selecting our assumptions. And I think one of the most important thing, you know, which is generally don't looked after so much, governance and control. A tool which can make us capable that we can have a very strong governance around the models, around how we are reporting, around you know, having a feature of sign off, you know, a control built in. So that was, again, very, very critical and important for us. For us, as I said, Cycle was able to do these things, so it automatically became our right tool. We'll now go on the next step.
So step three is probably the most commonly skipped step of all the ones in the recipe. Before you embark on that build, that transformation, you've got this great design. Stop, pause, reconsider. Have you got the right design? Have you challenged what is necessary versus nice to have? Have you engaged with all of the right stakeholders? Have you considered the full end-to-end if that's your core objective? Have you talked to end users as well as senior management? Have you actually thought about in your detailed design how to leverage the technology so you're not just replacing an old process in a new tool? Have you thought about all those day-to-day requirements but not overly focused on the immaterial? And is that set up for success? Have you thought about the governance, continuing to engage with stakeholders, having the right milestones, having the right steering and touch points within your project plan to support that success? And essential is a good project plan, but I'll say you need to plan, but you'll also need to replan. Hurdles are inevitable in transformation, whether that's something big like COVID that QBE faced, or something smaller like an absence of a team member, or having competing BAU priorities. So think about those competing requirements for your team. Make sure you've got the right team members set up to UAT and test any new platform implemented. Think about backfill. Have you allowed adequate time to test, to retest, to remediate, and potentially to optimize and rationalize what you've built, given through that journey you may have picked up some new requirements? So set your project up for success before you launch into implementation. Obviously, implementation, standard steps, build, test, UAT. But I think people underestimate the importance of UAT and making sure that you have the right users, they're ready to test that platform. Not whether the numbers reconcile, not just bridging the results, that's the core part of testing, but actually looking at the usability of that new system. Will it allow you to set the right governance, roles, responsibilities? Will you be able to deliver those results on time? Some of the pitfalls that I've seen across various companies of different sizes across the globe, but also from our experience on the QBE journey, making sure as you go and embark on that transformation that you continue to challenge yourself. And if you identify a new requirement, don't just bolt it on. Be like getting your baking powder, chucking it in the end and hoping that the cake will still rise. You need to think about how to integrate those changes as and when they emerge. You need to continually go back and engage with those stakeholders, because if you lose momentum, you lose buy-in. And when you actually release and go live, you won't have that embedded way of working. And as I alluded to earlier, don't over-focus on the tool. Make sure you're focusing on the cultural change. Are there any stakeholders that you need to particularly convince a change in way of working? And don't add too much flexibility at the sake of transparency. Don't do it just because you can. As I said, transformation is hard. But equally, the journey is never old. It is never over. You need to make sure that before you go live, you actually prepare. So make sure you've got your IT environment set up. You've allowed time to productionize things. But equally, you've set the right expectations. It is very, very rare that there won't be feedback when you go live. People need to test it in live conditions to actually understand the changes in ways of working needed. So set that expectation. You want feedback. Put in place good model governance, a modeling team, a head of actuarial modeling who will take that feedback and continue to evolve and improve those models. At that point, going from delivering that cake, we'll go back to QBE's case study.
Thanks. I'll specifically talk about the QBE case study. So what happened when exactly we started on this transformation journey? What went well, what didn't went well, and how did we take it from there? So when we started with this journey, we had all those discussions and, you know, multiple discussions with Dynamo, OnCycle, and, you know, our internal teams and everything. And we then developed a model which was really very comprehensive. It was able to do what I was explaining in terms of our pain areas. It was able to do all the data processing, all the reserving methods, the final output, everything was there. So it was an amazing model, a big step up from what we were doing earlier. So it was definitely a success from those criterias. And yeah, the team was really happy because everything was there in just one solution. So we were really happy. This particular model was built on our short tail portfolio. So it was for all the short tail products. And it was really a good success, or I would say a big step up on what we were doing at that point in time when we moved. We then parallelly, once we had delivered model one, we then embarked on creating another model for our long tail products. This model was a bigger improvement even on our model one. We had, you know, all the learnings that we got from our model one, we were able to implement in model two, which meant our model two was more refined, more sophisticated, more user-friendly, and it was able to meet more of the pain areas, which probably model one was not. So model two definitely was a much better model versus model one. In the meantime, when we were actually working on model two, the team members of who were using model one, they started realizing that, you know, it would have been better if some more features were there on that existing model. So they started building things on the existing model. Obviously, when those things happened, it was not really a very unified design. So, you know, there were a lot of circular references that happened, you know, in the because the team probably, you know, when they were doing, they didn't even realize that the original model was able to do some of the work. So they didn't, they were kind of not involved in the UAT, which, you know, we were referring earlier, that UAT is very important and very critical. And it's not just doing the UAT, but involving the team, the end users who would be actually using the model in performing while doing the UAT. So I think one of the, you know, pitfalls for us that happened, that yes, we tested the numbers, but did we check the usability? And I think because those things were not really done properly, the team realized that they still need, there are still pain areas which their model is not able to do. So they started adding on to those things. And that's where it created a bit of a complexity in the model. And there wasn't any structural coherence in terms of design. So, you know, we started going back to the same pain areas that we had. And, you know, because the team probably did not had trust in the model, then automatically they started going back to the previous practices of maybe using Excel again over the model that was capable of doing a lot of those things in an automated fashion. So we then thought that we have encountered a lot of issues with our model one. Model two was something which was a success. So we thought about, can we build a model, you know, take model two basically and incorporate the new features that we need for model one and maybe effectively just have one model that can serve for all the purpose. Theoretically, great idea. Next question, can Cycle do it? Yes, Cycle was capable of doing that. Cycle, you know, you can really create one model which is universal for all your products and you can use it for all your products. Easy for us because then we have to maintain only one model. You have to, you know, you can scale only that one particular model. And then, you know, you can use it for all your products and you do not have to think about consistencies because, you know, if it's one model, it's automatically much more consistent. So yes, theoretically, it was one of the great ideas. But practically, what happened? When we adapted model one products on our model three, which is a unified model, a better version, which has, you know, which we can do everything, we really encountered significant challenges. Overall, the model really became much complex because, you know, if you can think of model two already was a very complex model. It was taking care of a lot of products. We added the nuances of all the products from model one as well. So, you know, theoretically it sounds good, but practically it started becoming a much more complex model with huge number of parameters for the team to update, to manage. And tracing numbers started becoming a challenge. So it was difficult for us. So we then took a step back that what should we do? We then took a step back and thought about the design of the process that we need. So one of the things was we knew what do we need as inputs and what do we need as outputs. It was very clear. So we then emphasized on modular designing, which is easy for us to scale up rather than having everything together in more complex environment. Which also meant that we started, rather than doing one model, we decided that we should have two different templates, two different models. So that was more modular. having a balance between flexibility and complexity. Yes, if your tool can do it, do you still need that feature? Do you need that complexity or that flexibility? Because as soon as you say that you want all the flexibilities, you're making your model really very complex. So it's really, you need to think about whether it's a pragmatic decision to bring in all the complexities and flexibilities that you're thinking about. Can't emphasize how important it is to involve all your stakeholders from the beginning of this journey. It is one of the most critical aspects, which I think a lot of times we miss, but it is very important. It's important for change management and everything, because then they feel part of the process. They are the ones who know the pain areas, so they are the ones who can help you build a much better model. So involving your stakeholders throughout the journey is really very critical for the success of your project. And a planned UAT, which, you know, Laurie also talked about, it's very critical and important to have success criteria defined and users involved in the UAT. I'll pass on, Laurie, to you.
I think it's fair to say that they went back to step two. They went back to that high level as well as detailed design to decide or redecide what that balance should be, what those trade-offs should be to make better use of the tool, as well as to get better adoption within the organization. So I guess from our perspective, key takeaways. Don't rush into building. As I said, that step two, that sitting down, going through your ways of working, your roles, responsibilities, selecting the right tool to meet your success criteria and doing that detailed design is critical. Don't skip it. And at times, if needed, go back and revisit the design that hopefully you have carefully documented. Secondly, the modularity and clarity of the model is really imperative. And it's not just in the short term, but in terms of maintaining long-term objectives. So ability to add new functionality as is appropriate or remove aspects of the model and replace as needed. So thinking about that as part of design, but also keeping that in mind as you're building. Thirdly, I think we've said it multiple times, stakeholder collaboration, getting that buy-in, talking to all the relevant stakeholders, taking them on the journey. Common theme of all the transformations I've been involved in, but we've lived and breathed that through the last few years. And finally, that the right tool can make all the difference, but you need to leverage it appropriately. Use it to meet your objectives, your ways of working. Don't just replace your old process in a new tool. Think about how best to use that new tool to meet that success criteria. So tying back to that baking theme, think about the skill set of users. If anyone in this room has cooked with kids in the kitchen, they know how hard it is if you don't have the right skill set, the right steer. When you're deciding which cake to make, think about, do you really need those sprinkles on top? Who is going to be consuming that cake at the end? Are they allergic to peanuts? Yeah. Make sure you've thought about all of that ahead. But don't be afraid to challenge yourself throughout the journey. Come back, revisit. And we are more than happy to take questions about this topic because we're particularly passionate about actuarial transformation.
Thank you. Please join me in thanking the presenters. Okay, we have a couple of questions here. Here's the first one. One of the main challenges of transformation is BAU work and to continue the current cumbersome approach versus investment in building new and improved processes. How did QBE manage this?
Thank you for the question. At QBE, we had started with a dedicated team. So we had a team where when we started on this journey, it's really not possible asking for the BAU team to be really involved and do everything that is required. But as I said, stakeholder involvement was, is critical. We had, from the actuarial team, we created a new dedicated team who was responsible for this transformation journey, responsible for interacting with Dynamo guys so that, we can clear out what we want to build, how we want to build, work out on the design. And then this team was responsible to go back to the specific stakeholders, because they are still the ones, doing the BAU work who have much more clarity in terms of the pain areas going back to them, understanding what exactly they want, and then trying to implement and design all those things. So we still had kept that element where BAU team, yes, was involved in the design and everything because it was important for the success. But at the same time, we had a dedicated team of this whole transformation.
I just add from my experience that the most successful companies when they transform do have a dedicated team, and they do continue that after the model has been implemented. They have a head of modeling, a modeling team who's responsible, as I said, for that good governance, the evolution of the model. So they carry forward those good practices.
I think I may be able to guess the answer to this question, but let's see. Having learned about the strengths of Cycle, what changes would you make to your spreadsheet models to improve processes if you were to continue using spreadsheet models?
I can try. I'm not sure how much can we do with the spreadsheet models because of the challenges. But I think someone who would have started initially building in a spreadsheet model, probably they would have done a lot of work in terms of how you want the data flow, how you want to ensure that, you know, with minimal inputs, you know, completely automated spreadsheets that, you know, the user has to do minor changes and they can get to the output. I think governance become a big challenge with spreadsheet models because there isn't a good way to manage that people will not make changes to those processes. You can't really say that, you know, you do not have a edit right. You cannot make changes to your spreadsheet models, which in most of the new tools you can. You know, you can control teams that you just have the capacity to run, or maybe teams, you know, who is more on the modeling side, they have the capacity to change. And then, you know, documenting those change, I think, again, a very, very critical aspect, documenting. It's tricky if you can do those things, you know, in a spreadsheet environment where you can ensure that any person who has, you know, working on that model, if they have made a change, they ensure that it is done. You know, consistent practices, if the formulas have been changed, and so they do not go back to using the same changed spreadsheet model again and again, because if the first model has inaccuracies, you know, inconsistencies, it will keep on building over time. So I think if you can manage the governance part of spreadsheet models, that could be great. But again, I think it's not just the governance. Can you do, I mean, if you have 175 reserving classes, can you possibly do that in spreadsheet world? Still tricky. You can try to automate and, you know, simplify your approach. But yeah, if as soon as you want to go more towards the sophisticated environment and capacity to slice and dice, spreadsheet models might pose a challenge.
From a global perspective, we're increasingly seeing people not just jump straight to, can Cycle help us, but they're focusing on that target state, which means even if they decide to stay in Excel, they've stopped, have thought about roles, responsibilities, data handshakes, better governance. My favorite, do I really need to intervene in these assumptions this quarter, or can I trust the predefined algorithms? You can predefine in tools like Excel. You won't get the level of integration and lockdown that you'll get in a more enterprise platform. But these principles of thinking about the way of working, the roles, responsibilities, the data transfers, where you're investing in manual effort, there's a lot of value in going through this phase or this step, regardless of whether you decide to change tool or platform.
You just raised a question that had arisen in my own mind as I was listening to the presentation. Obviously, you're striving here for unification, consistency, coherency. I mean, you'd like each line of business to be in some way a clone of all the others. But there was one little box. Well, here it is. It's still here. Analysis of change. Mm-hmm. So this is the point at which everything stops being automated. And someone has to take surveillance over the model where it appears to be failing and introduce corrections. Is this a chink in the armor? Because you may have this function delegated to different teams who may have different tolerances for model errors and respond differently.
you've covered the key points there about what are those tolerances, so the materiality thresholds. And again, we're seeing that coming more to the forefront, that you're pre-deciding what those tolerances should be, and you're setting the steps and analysis of change, and you're bringing it to the forefront. So instead of it being an analysis of surplus that goes into some Australian reporting requirements, you're automating so that when you're deciding on your assumptions and analysing your movements and preparing your narrative, you're using that analysis of change to justify where you haven't intervened or where you do need to intervene, or perhaps before the next valuation, where this method is no longer appropriate. So using dashboards and diagnostics, you're better alerting your attention to where you need to focus your efforts and where the model may no longer be appropriate. And for me, that's the biggest risk of automation. If we don't have the right diagnostics and dashboards over the top, we trust the models run green, great, push the results out to reporting. But there may be an emerging trend. There may be something that's invalidated those predefined algorithms. And this is why I think analysis of change is becoming more important. We can predefine the steps, but we also need to teach our junior actuaries how to interpret analysis of change.
Thank you. What was the reserving team structure? Any changes to it post-transformation?
I think the structure was very similar. So the structure was very similar. We had STAT teams and the non-STAT teams, LMI, so three different teams. And then LMI team, that team was also responsible for the strategic actuarial pieces. The team pretty much is same. The only introduction since we started with this journey was having another team who was responsible for this whole transformation, the actuarial modeling team. So it's been consistently same. We haven't really made any major changes in the structure of the team. All those things have relatively stayed the same.
But the idea in that journey is that they're contributing more to the strategic objectives of the company instead of handle turning. So hopefully a change in role of the team, albeit not a change in the structure.
Yes, structure pretty much the same. But yes, roles have changed because we are now focusing more on the. Thank you. We are now focusing more on the planning and forecasting. As I said, one of the key objectives for us was how can we enable our actuarial team so that they can take a leading part in business planning and forecasting initiatives, performance initiatives. And I think that is still one of our main directives and, strategic pieces that we really want to do. And that's where I think, freeing up the time for the actuarial team, in all these manual works will give them the capacity that they can, do more on that side. We are again on the planning and everything. Again, it's do we have enough tools for them? So it goes on the same line. So yes, roles definitely have changed from where we started on this journey. Structure-wise, pretty much the same.
Now, here is an invitation for free advertising. I hope you haven't planted an agent in the audience here. Can you please describe the future aspirations and potential for the Cycle product from both a Dynamo and QBE perspective?
I promise that my colleague didn't send me that question. We actually have three key objectives within the platform. One is better model management, so using things like AI to help with model documentation, change management, so you can focus from an actuarial perspective on whether you're comfortable with the movements rather than documenting what you've changed within the model manually. Secondly, it's about faster decision-making, so improving the diagnostics and the dashboards and the metrics that support an automated process, whether that's through AI and ML and other techniques or just advanced statistics to say, okay, if you trusted this first pick of results, it would have this impact on your ultimate claims versus if you trusted the last four or you went with the previous selected assumptions. So more metrics, more outputs, more focus on that insight. And thirdly, making sure our platform can wrap around things like Python and R and other code, which may be better suited to certain techniques in the future. So ensuring that we keep this vision of automation and integration, but that we ensure our clients are using the best piece of code or tech wrapped around to meet those end goals.
What other tools were considered? How long did the journey take? Were there any low points in this journey? How was this managed?
I can try. I was not part of when we started with this journey. This started somewhere around 2020. So, you know, 2020, when we started discussing about the tools and everything, I do not have a lot of understanding on if there were other tools. Not aware about what all tools were discussed at that point in time. When I joined in, the decision was taken for Cycle. But yes, for us, the journey started back in 2020. COVID times when I think the whole planning and everything started and we embarked on this journey. We have got most of our products now on Cycle, excluding LMI. The entire portfolio is now on Cycle. It's been quite a big journey. There had been a lot of ups and downs, you know, which you could have seen a glimpse of that through our case study where, you know, the teams were, even after having that model in place, the teams were not really confident about using it and they were going back to their Excel spreadsheets and things like that. So I think that whole change around using a new system was difficult. I think it was one of the most challenging things for us to accept and adopt and, you know, educate our team to start using the new ways or new tool. And I think it also comes from the fact that, you know, whenever you have a new tool, you still have fear of unknowns. So in the hindsight, the teams probably did not want to take risk and they thought that, you know, they have Excel models, so, you know, they do some things in Cycle, maybe the core reserving, but come down to the reporting part of it again back in Excel. This was one of the constant issues that we faced, you know. But I think gradually when the team started seeing, you know, the diagnostics that Laurie was talking about, having, you know, the whole reconciliation and control framework on the template, you know, so you know that your numbers, it has run, model has run, but are your numbers sensical? You know, if you can get a clarity on that, yes, you can rely on these numbers. You will have your team having more confidence on those models. So gradually, you know, it's still, as I said, transformation is a journey. It's not that we started in 2020 and we are in 25 completely done, that we are not going to do anything further. That's not really the case. We are continuously, you know, adding new things. We are improving, you know, still taking account from all the teams, what are the pain areas they're still going through and trying to still adopt and keep improving our existing models. So I don't think it's a journey which has completed. It's still work in progress for us.
You mentioned people were making ad hoc changes to the new model and reverting to the spreadsheet model. How did you convince senior stakeholders to stay the course and continue to invest in the project?
I think adding, you know, so I think this is what I was saying earlier as well, that the problem was, I think, the fear of the unknowns. They don't know if the output that they're seeing is correct or reliable. So having controls built, ensuring that, you know, the output that they see is reliable, I think that was important. Also, the UAT perspective. So I think in the initial models, the teams were involved, but they were not really so closely involved in the UATs, which meant that a lot of features and a lot of functions which were built on the tool, they were not even aware that such features exist, you know, and it's been automated. So they did not knew that these things are already there and they were still trying to do all those things back in their spreadsheet models or in the Cycle models as well. So that's why I said circular references started coming in, because the same piece was there on multiple places because team was not really aware that this already there. So I think gradually we started having more regular connects with the teams, educating them, you know, how the flow is there. Even ensuring that when we did UAT for our new models, we always have the team who's using the final model involved in the UAT and they take a bigger role, you know, with the BAU work. Yes, very challenging. But yes, we ensure that while performing UAT, they were really an integral part of that particular work.
I just add one point that I brought back up on the slide about onboarding. So we've thought a lot about if new members join the team, again, go back to why. Why are they using Cycle, not Excel? What are the benefits of that particular tool? Making sure they've got user guides, model documentation, that they know about the functionality.
Well, sadly, that bell informs us that it's time to wind down. I'd like to thank the audience for a number of incisive questions and thank the presenters for their answers. Thanks, one and all.